You're listening to Therapy for Your Money, a podcast about all things money and finance for therapy practice owners. If you want to feel confident and in control of your financial life, then you've come to the right spot. I'm your host, Julie Harris. I'm an accountant and the owner of Green Oak Accounting. My firm specializes in working with private practices across the U.S., and my team and I have worked with hundreds of private practice owners. I'm on a mission to share all the best practices I've learned along the way because I want you to have a profitable private practice. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Therapy for Your Money. Today, we're talking about compensation models for group practice. So I think this is a really important conversation to have. Typically, payroll is going to be your biggest expense in a group practice, right? So it has long-term impact. There's a long-term impact to any compensation decisions that you make. And often one of the big mistakes that we see is not really giving a lot of thought to how payroll gets structured, how the compensation model gets structured, but also not thinking about the future, right? So while you may be hiring, you know, maybe you're at the beginning of your hiring journey and you're just going to offer commission, for example, and you may not be offering sick time, paid time off, benefits. You know, I want you to think today about what's in your future. Because if those are things that you want to offer at some point, right? If you want to have a large group practice someday and you want to be able to add those items because they are really good benefits to have for employee retention, then I want you to think of compensation as a whole and how much those pieces are going to cost. I want you to think of the benefit piece now, just so that you can build in some room to add those items. So not every state is going to require this, but some states and cities do have either PTO or sick leave requirements. So definitely check on that with your employment attorney. But most of the time, PTO is not required. So, you know, when I run calculations, I usually look at an average of 48 weeks per year. So when I'm thinking of an employee or a contractor that they are going to take some time off between holidays, sick days, vacation time, they're probably going to be working an average of 48 weeks per year. And that tends to be pretty accurate. So that doesn't mean that you're paying them for the time that they're not working. If they're not seeing clients, they're not bringing in money. So when I look at the revenue, that's the calculation that I use. So let's start from the top first. You know, obviously, there's the big important contractor versus employee discussion, and there's a couple of pretty significant differences between the two. So typically, contractors are going to make their own hours. Usually, you're not going to be able to control how and when the work is done, right? So where they might set their own core hours, you can schedule them during those hours. But if they want to take a day off, there's not really much that you can do about that. And you're not providing supervision, right? So you're not telling them how to do their job. You're just telling them this is the job that needs to get done. And they're responsible for figuring out how they're going to do that and when they're going to do it. So if you have contractors, they are considered to be self-employed. So typically they're going to pay their own insurance, their own liability and malpractice insurance. Sometimes they will be covered under your workers' compensation policy as well, but typically they have their own independent insurance. My preference is when there is employer-contractor relationship is that the contractor have their own individual LLC. That's just my personal preference. There is no benefit requirement. So if you're offering benefits to a team, you don't have to offer anything to the contractor. You also don't have to pay unemployment or FICA or any kind of payroll taxes on that. So you're just paying them directly. How about employees? So when you have employees, you can set their own hours. So what I mean by that is that in the employment contractor, you can say you are required to be available for a minimum of X clinical hours per week. You can't really do that with a contractor. You can have an unofficial agreement, but you can't tell them you need to be here on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So with an employee, you can do that. You can also dictate how and when the work is done. So when you have a very specific vision in mind on what that client-therapist relationship is going to look like, what the customer service is going to look like, an employee-employer relationship a lot of times makes sense because you do have a lot more control over how the work is done. In many states, provisionally licensed therapists must be employees, so definitely check that in your state. That would be with your licensing board. So that is another consideration where if you have folks on your team that aren't fully licensed, you may or may not have a choice on whether they're a contractor or an employee. One of the big differences is employees can be a little bit more expensive because you are responsible for the employer side of FICA, and that's Social Security and Medicare. And then there is also state unemployment tax, federal unemployment tax, also known as SUTA and FUTA. So those are things that if you are running payroll, you're going to see that on your payroll report. You are responsible for those. And then you might need to, you know, add them on your insurance. There's some payroll processing fees, right? So there's additional fees that are involved there. So that's the basic differences, very, very basic differences. Obviously, this is not a legal discussion. We're talking about this mostly from an accounting perspective. One of the main points I want to bring forward, though, during this discussion is, you know, as far as the IRS is concerned, you're never going to get in trouble for having employees. You can sometimes get in trouble for having contractors. So that's just something to keep in mind. You know your own risk tolerance best. So just keep that in mind when you're making that decision. And the other, you know, my other point is that, you know, although employees tend to be a little bit more expensive, the really interesting thing is that practices with full-time employees tend to be more the most profitable overall. They're more profitable in a general sense than practices with a lot of part-time employees. They're also typically more profitable than practices with only contractors, just because you have a lot more control. So whereas a contractor could come in and say, yep, I'm willing to work 20 hours a week, put me on the schedule, a few months go by, you know what, actually, I only want to work 2 days a week, and that can erode, and you don't have a lot of control there. So this is just a trivial bit of knowledge, but typically practices with employees tend to be more profitable than practices with contractors. All right, once you've made that big decision, how do you decide how you're going to pay your team? There's a couple of different ways to do that. So I'm going to list them all and then go over each one. So first, there's a percentage of the fee collected, also called a commission, right? So percentage or commission. There's a flat fee per session. There's an hourly rate. There's also a base plus commission, a salary, and what I call reverse contractor. There are some additional variations on all of those, but those are the main types of compensation. So I'm going to go over each one. So percentage of fee collected, that one's pretty straightforward, right? And that's probably the most common that we see, where you're paying a percentage of the fee collected. So just to use round numbers, if you are making $100 per session and you have a 55% commission, you would pay $55 to your team member. Right? Straightforward enough. So if you had an employee, you would, on top of that 55%, pay payroll tax. So that does end up being right around like 59% as a total cost. So just keep that in mind. Typically, contractors are going to get a bigger percentage just because you're not paying for payroll tax. So most of the time, employees are going to start at a slightly lower percentage, because you also have to add on payroll tax to that. You're paying half of the payroll tax, whereas a contractor is paying all of it themselves. Next, there is flat fee per session. And what I mean by that is that it's not a percentage. So you might have, for example, some panels that reimburse at 100, some panels that reimburse at 120. And again, I'm just using round numbers here. At a flat fee per session, you would say, clinician, you are getting paid $55 per session, no matter what the reimbursement is. So whether you're making 100 per session or 120, they're always getting $55 per session. Most of the time, that also includes the note time, right? So that would be flat fee per session. If it's a 50-minute session, that includes the time in between, that includes the note time, right? There's no additional pay usually for that piece. Next up, we have the hourly rate. And in some states, this is the simplest way to go, like California, for example, where you really do need to make sure that you're paying your employees for each hour that they work. And that has to be at least the minimum wage. So there's typically an hourly rate in California where there's a clinical hourly rate and then an administrative hourly rate as well, right? And that has to be at least minimum wage. So what that might look like is, instead of, you know, a $55 flat fee per session, it might be $55 for every clinical hour plus $20 or $25 per hour for every administrative hour, for example. So a base plus commission usually doesn't apply for a contractor just because of the complexity. So you'd only use that when you are required to, where you have an employee, for example, where you're required by law in your state to compensate them for each hour worked. So there's a base there for each clinical hour and other hours, right? Administrative, everything else. But then on top of that, they would also get a commission on their specific sessions, usually when you get paid. So that tends to get set up in a situation where you want to share the risk as a practice owner. So if you get a smaller reimbursement or if you don't get reimbursed, then there's a shared risk with the clinician. Next up is salary. We see this one the least often, and probably because it feels like a lot more risk for the practice owner, right? Where you're basically guaranteeing someone pay regardless of whether they're working or not. And so we see salaried positions more often in the million plus dollar per year practices, just because there is room to sustain that. So what that looks like is there would typically be an employment agreement with a set salary, and that salary would be based on an expected number of clinical hours per week. So for example, you might say, clinician, I expect you to work 20 clinical hours per week. That might mean they're on the schedule for 25, but you know you're going to fill, you know, 20 to 22, for example, of those clinical hours. And for that, I'm going to pay you X dollars per year. Typically, you are taking into account the fact that they are not going to work 52 weeks out of the year, right? Most people aren't going to do that. So you want to have something written in about that. So it's not necessarily paid vacation, but you're essentially splitting the fee that they would earn in 48 weeks. You're paying that to them over 52 weeks. So it's not really paid vacation. So you may want to add that in, add some paid vacation in, but based on what you're expecting, that's how you're setting the fee. For strictly clinicians, salary is pretty rare. Where we most often see a salary is in larger group practice where there becomes a need for a leadership role. So either a site supervisor or a clinical director, something along those lines, where a clinician is basically saying, I'm going to reduce my clinical hours and I'm going to replace those hours with some leadership time. So I'm going to supervise the team. I'm going to provide case consultation for the team on site. There's some administrative items. They're helping with the scheduling, right? All of those different pieces, things that really move the needle for the practice, but that also reduce the number of hours that you need to be involved in those tasks. So usually that's sliding a piece off from the owner onto that clinical director. So we typically see a leadership role begin right around $750,000 a year to a million, somewhere in that range. It makes a lot of sense to add a leadership position, because at that point, even if you as the owner are not seeing that many clients, there's a lot of leadership work to be done, right? There's some recruiting, there's overseeing the admin, making sure all systems are working properly, like billing and cash flow, right? So there's a lot of those pieces of the business that need to be done. So offloading some of the clinical leadership work makes a lot of sense at that point. So in those cases, a salary is really nice, because basically you're guaranteeing a fixed pay to your clinician. They're in exchange committing to a certain number of leadership and clinical hours per week, and it usually is a win-win. So on that specific clinician, because you're paying them for leadership time, you're not going to make as big of a profit on them, right? And that's a normal thing. But we look at the big picture, and you have to have enough clinicians that it can offset that, right? So that's why I mentioned the $750K to $1 million range, because that's typically when there's enough income and profit to help sustain a piece of that going to a leadership role. And under those numbers, it just doesn't really make sense. It really tends to erode the profit pretty significantly, so I don't usually recommend it. Our last compensation structure is the reverse contractor, and this one is pretty rare. This does not apply for employees. It only applies for contractors. So this is a situation where you have a contractor who has their own LLC, is seeing their own sessions, and they're collecting the funds. They're collecting the fee for each session, and they are paying you, the group practice owner, a percentage or a flat fee for each session that they see. And that's basically a payment. They're paying you for the shared services, right? So they're paying you for the billing, they're paying you for the space, for the marketing, for all the referrals that they get, but they really are their own business. And actually, they would be issuing you, the group practice owner, a 1099 at the end of the year. So this is pretty rare. I have seen this work. It can work, but you really need to make sure that those numbers make sense and that the fee split covers all the expenses. So basically, they're paying you a percentage of their fee for all of the overhead that you provide, but you also still need to always make sure that there's enough room for profit in there. Another consideration of how you're paying everyone is the timing of it. So you can either pay when the service is rendered or when the session is paid, when payment is received. So again, this is another one where you're going to want to check with your employment attorney on what's legal in your state. But the reason I bring that up is that there's a big difference in cost for hiring someone with a pay when paid system and pay when the service is rendered. So let's say, for example, you are paying someone when the service is rendered. So you hire a clinician, they're onboarding, for their first 2 weeks, they're seeing, 10 clients a week. They're just coming on board. You're filling up their schedule. Great. Then the next Monday you have to run payroll. Well, you have to pay them for those sessions, whether you've received any money or not, right? And we all know that probably hasn't happened yet. So especially if you're an insurance-based practice. So it can be a lot more expensive to hire that way. And it's very, very doable. So if that's required in your state, no problem. You just want to make sure that you have that buffer of cash available when you hire someone. So you want to know that you have the money ahead of time, and then you're always kind of replenishing that account, right? So the funds come in and then you're paying their next paycheck out of that. So you do need some money up front though. So if cash is tight, this is not always possible. When you have a system that's pay when paid, those first few weeks, the clinician is not going to make a lot of money. So they definitely need to know that that's coming, that there is going to be a delay, right? They might not get paid for their first 2 weeks of work for, about 4 weeks until you get paid and then the next payroll cycle. So it is a lot easier to do on a practice perspective, but it can be harder for a clinician. So you want to make sure that they know that that's coming. But what that would look like basically is that there's essentially no cost to hiring someone with that system. So in a lot of practices, that makes sense because you are getting paid from the insurance company or from your direct pay clients before you render the service. I've also seen pay when paid be really effective in private pay practices where the clinician is responsible for running the payment. And so we have one client, for example, in my accounting firm where the clinician is responsible for running the payment in the EHR, and they were supposed to do that at the end of each day, and they weren't. They were not doing it. And so sometimes it would go to the next week. There would be a delay of several days. So we instituted a change where that clinician now only gets paid when they run the payment. For example, if they run a payment on a Friday night and for sessions that they had on Friday, and then we run payroll on Monday, then they're getting paid for that session in the next payroll. But if they wait until the following Monday and that payroll period has closed, then they're not going to get paid for those sessions until the following payroll is run. So what that change in system did is that, guess what? The clinicians are running their payments at the end of every single day because now they have incentive. They want to get paid. So what was kind of a ridiculous problem, there wasn't really a good reason other than the fact that there was no incentive for the clinicians to run the payments at the end of the day. Now they're doing it very consistently because they know they get compensated on that. So that has really helped this specific practice with the cash flow and making sure it's not quite as lumpy and cash is coming in on a regular basis. So one last thing, let's talk about benefits. I've got another episode planned with a significantly larger benefit discussion, but there's a lot of different types of benefits that you can add. The most popular are health insurance, PTO, and 401k. There's a lot of other things that you can do, but those are the most popular. So as you consider, you know, building out your team and how you're going to compensate everyone, think of those pieces because those can add a really significant expense to your business. They're very, very valuable to your team, but it is a significant business expense. So consider those items before you set the compensation so that you can have the room to add those in a year or two. A couple of other less popular benefits that you could include are things like life insurance, cell phone reimbursement, CEU reimbursement, travel to various conferences, right? Those are all other things that you could do. You could add short-term disability, long-term disability. Those are a little bit less common, very normal in large businesses, but a little bit less in small businesses. All right, listeners, what's your action item for today? I hope that you are planning your compensation structure in a way that's going to make sure that there is profit left for you because every practice should be profitable. Head over to therapyforyourmoney.com. We're going to have a worksheet available for you to download that's going to go over the main compensation structures and a brief description of each of them. There's also going to be a chart that shows you what the equivalent is from one structure to another. So how you would think of them in an equal way. Talk to you soon. If you need some accounting help, head over to therapyforyourmoney.com and click on the Green Oak Accounting button. There you can find out lots of information about my accounting firm and all of our specialized services for private practice owners.
The information contained in this podcast represents the host and guest's general opinions and should not be construed as personalized accounting and tax advice. Listeners should consider all facts and circumstances before applying this information and seek appropriate advice from an accountant, financial planner, lawyer, or other professional. Any info provided does not constitute accounting, tax, or legal advice.